Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Sam Hunter, good morning to you.
Jer, over the years, you've let me down very rarely. But let's not give that show any publicity. I'm surprised you know about it, and Hazard definitely doesn't watch it. A clown show that smells of brown stuff. Bad start to my morning, mate.
That was definitely our tone. The whole fact that it's Eden Hazard's entire fault for the collapse of Real Madrid.
The empire falls on his shoulders. Well, look, there is an element of waiting for Godot about the whole thing, because if you remember last season, he was equally plagued with, you know, a huge variety of difficulties, some of which, I mean, the one part of it that isn't his fault is that Meunier for PSG in the group game at Bernabeu that ended 2-2 against a side coached by Tuchel. Meunier, I don't think maliciously, was stamped on Hazard's ankle way out on the left as Madrid were attacking, at a point where Hazard was really fit and playing well. And it was the ankle problems that largely sidelined him last season. But my waiting for Godot references that he'd really just about got back for the second leg of the semi-final last season. Zidane played him for 83 minutes in Portugal against City, and he did nothing because he could do nothing. He's a guy who needs to be, particularly as age catches him and after a season of near inactivity, he was completely unprepared for that game. And I watched with disappointment as you could just about understand Zidane taking a little punt on Hazard, saying before the game he's in a terrific moment right now. But match reading is a gigantic part of, you know, in-match reading is a gigantic part of elite football, possibly more than any time in our lifetimes. They've got five subs. People are strategically prepared. Impact subs that have been a thing in sport forever, but it's more the case now. And it's something that Zidane has really mastered across his time. The number of occasions when somebody will be brought on, whether it's a veteran, whether it's a kid, by Zidane, and turn a game in this group, they're alive because of it. Substitutions change the away tie at Borussia Mönchengladbach, change the tie at home to Inter Milan, when Real Madrid were struggling to even get out of the group, never mind reach this far. And therefore, to watch Hazard last night, struggling manfully, but lost in a sea of, you know, this electric football that Chelsea are so well drilled to play. That was a Real Madrid losing. Couldn't have been a surprise to anybody who's been watching the two sides in the last 6-8 weeks, nor across the two legs. But seeing Zidane misread and kind of have a sort of Citizen Kane rosebud with perpetually chasing, but I know Eden's going to do something soon, and it all just petering out. That was a little bit sad to watch. Zidane got that so badly wrong.
Defeats like this, where it is so complete, and you know, I mean, maybe Real Madrid could have scored a couple of times, but certainly on the balance of chances, the XG would suggest that that was a mullering last night that Chelsea gave them. Does that precipitate massive internal analysis and rancor at Real Madrid, or are they so preoccupied with the politics of survival at the moment that perhaps they just batten down the hatches and try and go again with the same setup next season? I guess I'm asking, is this a massive crisis now for Real Madrid?
It's a jigsaw picture, Jared, because there is no director of football. And the cleanest way to answer your, you know, finger in the air thermometer question would be to say, what's the budget of that director of football? What's his or her politics philosophy? And have we heard the DOF speaking recently to be able to give proper answers to. Here's one. It's Florentino. There was a DOF when Zidane didn't want to be a coach. That functioned very nicely, thank you. The jigsaw picture would have to include the fact that, although he won't confirm it, many of us believe that Zidane has reached a point where he will choose to refresh himself, by which I mean that there's always going to be a seat of power for him at Real Madrid so long as Florentino is the president. Florentino feels that he'll be the president for life. He's changed the statutes so dramatically that really it's very difficult for anybody but him or his chosen successor to win the election. He's been uncontested the last two, three times. So Zidane has the option of a planned departure, which prior to this, and probably even including the fact that they'd gone through here and won the trophy, the idea very much is that he's likely to look at taking over from Deschamps. Everything's got to fall into place. Deschamps has to go through with this idea that he'll lead the national team. Zidane quite fancies it. And a dark horse or a dark zebra in the background is that there is no question that Agnelli at Juventus thinks that Zidane can have a magical impact on that club, who humiliate themselves over the Super League, have been trounced, have been mullered in the domestic competition by a number of sides, not just by Inter, who won the title. So Zidane's going to have options, Ger. That's probably the principal way to say it. From a personal point of view, just from enjoyment, I'd really like him to stay in Spanish football. I hugely enjoy watching him, listening to him every week broadly, although the gas is running out of the engine and the team needs reconstructing, revitalizing. Broadly, I think he's probably capable of that if he wants to. My doubt is whether he wants to or not. And the last part of the thing is Florentino was so obsessed for the last year, year and a half, 2 years, with initially with buying Mbappe and then with Haaland, that they put money aside. They didn't spend big last season. The idea was that they'd be able to cope. Overall, you could see last night that Liverpool, for example, had a huge opportunity lost because the way in which they didn't close down Modric and particularly Kroos, presumably because they couldn't, physically they couldn't. They could have done, you know, a normal Liverpool could have done what Chelsea did and shut down the midfield and therefore largely shut down Real Madrid. So there has to be massive change, whether it can all be achieved in one summer or not, I don't know. We know that they want to renew Luka Modric, but the deal's not been done. We know that the Ramos deal is going right down to the wire. He's free to leave. Lucas has been offered a deal, but at the moment, it's not one that he wants to take. Nacho's out of contract too. Again, you'd imagine that deal will be done, but there's a whole host of things that will change. I believe that Varane is keen to experiment with a new brand of football. Paris Saint-Germain want him. He grew up a Paris Saint-Germain fan. No question that Manchester United want Varane too. So before you even, Benzema's got 1 year till he's out of contract again. Do they renew him, don't they? Before you even think about, like, what are the effects of being, what was your Spanish word you used there? Mullered by Chelsea. There's a whole lot going on behind the curtains at Real Madrid, Sharon. Luckily, they've got the very best director of football. So, morning, Florentino.
Like, it is going to be that reaction then when the supporters show up to the brand new Bernabeu in a few months' time, Graham, that will be quite telling. Is there a sense that they will stay loyal to the brand of Real Madrid and how they've operated over the past 5 or 6 years?
No, the fan base has never really changed all that much. Certainly in modern times, my lifetime since the 80s, since I first went to Spain, they can be ferocious and hostile on behalf of the club. If they think things are going well, if they feel slighted, they can be tolerant to a certain degree if they really understand the project. But it isn't that long ago. Certainly, it was Rafa Benitez who was the coach, and it was the first time, just before the first time Zidane was asked to take over. If you remember, still driven by Iniesta, Barcelona went there around late November, early December, and won 4-0 at Bernabeu. And although time has passed and it's been glory with European trophies pretty much ever since, at that stage, the number of fans who stayed behind in the Bernabeu to scream and shout, Florentino dimission, Presidente dimission, they want Florentino out in the streets, you must resign. And whoever was in charge of the PA turned it up to such a deafening level, the post-match music, that we were all in fear for our eardrums, just to drown it out. So in the scenario you're painting, that soon they're back in the big stadium and maybe a bit worried about, have they in the four-game run-in, starting with Seville this Sunday night, have they won the title? Which they can do. Many would probably have them as favourites now to win the title. They have the head-to-head advantage over Barcelona. They have the head-to-head advantage over Atleti. They think that Atleti will stumble at Camp Nou, that they beat Sevilla and then win the rest of the games, which they should. And then they're champions, repeat champions for only the third time in 30 years. Can you swallow that stat? So the next four match days in Spain will dictate how tough the environment you're talking about is going to be. But you also asked, what will they do? Well, if there's more of this, they won't be slow in saying, OK, the stadium's nice, very good, but sort the pitch out, sort the players out.
As a club, we've obviously attached the importance of signings to Real Madrid more than any other club in world football. Does that go for the supporters as well, Graeme? Is it a purely egotistical thing from Perez, the Galactico project, or do the supporters actually believe in this as well? And therefore, to see Hazard fizzle out as a Galactico or not see a big-name signing like Mbappe this summer, that would annoy them just as much as poor performances on the pitch?
It's a really good question. And whenever you're answering for supporters, there has to be a huge note of care. Mm. But if I sum up the people that I know, the vox pops that you see across the media, when you see the way in which certain types of journalism are well or badly received, the truth is the answer to your question is rather like Abramovich views coaches. There'll be another one coming along. Across the now nearly 21 years since Florentino took over as president and relaunched what was an original Galactico idea put forward by President Santiago Bernabeu and Sapporo as vice president when they were a weak club after the Civil War. They were entering the 50s with Atleti and Barcelona and Athletic dominating, genuinely. Obviously, none of us were alive then, but the fact is, if you research it, they were 8 stone weaklings. And Santiago Bernabeu said, this is who we'll buy. This is how we'll do it. And they did. And Florentino relaunched it from the year 2000, when Florentino relaunched that whole idea of Galacticos. There have been very few periods where Real Madrid haven't been able to successfully sign one or two and add them to one or two. And the fans' perspective will be, turn Hazard over. Turnover. Next, please. And It feels at odds with the way in which we've come through a spell where Barcelona were so planned, had so many academy players, had such a guiding philosophy, and you look across Spain to the centre, and it is just a right, use money, use the brand name, get out, buy immediacy, buy success, especially when Florentino has been deliberately saying for a number of years now, we can't compete financially with the state-controlled clubs, which is why they've gone out and bought players like Rodrigo and Vinicius and Reinier, who you can't see at the moment because he's in German football. You can't see in white colours because he's in Germany at the moment. There are a number of other footballers, including Valverde, who's exceptional, where he said, we do want to buy and let them grow. So they're caught in a mid-position at the moment whereby, as you've been driving at, the fans are going to say, buy us more success, buy us, Alan. And what's happening with this Mbappe fell after all this chit-chat? But if they add one or other of those, which you saw Manarola saying the other day, Madrid can't afford him, and he'd been to visit Florentino, it means that the top parts of that queue for Haaland seem to me to be ever-shifting. And they've been quite canny about not revealing their personal points of view. Raiola also said, Dortmund have said absolutely no way are we selling. Okay, maybe. But you throw one or other of those two, Haaland or Mbappe, fully fit into this Real Madrid team, restore the majority of them fitness. They went out there with just about half a team not Matt Sharp last night. So that's no defence of them on my part. That's the circumstances. It isn't simply about age. It isn't simply about end of era. But they need to have their stars fully fit. They need to refresh the athleticism. And if they add one of those two superstar strikers, keeping Courtois, they're going to stay competitive, I would argue.
Yeah, definitely competitive. It's just, it is interesting to see that great team that won so many Champions Leagues breaking up slowly. And it has happened almost imperceptibly with the end of the Ronaldo era. We felt that maybe there might be one more spin for them, but that hasn't quite been the case. I just want to get your thoughts on the achievement of Tuchel, and not just in reaching the final, but in having the team play the way they're playing, and in having N'Golo Kante play the way he's playing, which is as good as he's ever played. Last night's performance was right up there with any of the individual performances we've ever seen from Kante. And I thought that Kante had kind of gone because, for whatever reason, over the last couple of years, played out of position, less interested, I don't know, injured, tired.
Injured also. I mean, let's factor in the fact, yeah, he didn't enjoy Sarri at all. And, you know, much though I've enjoyed knowing Lampard as a player and coach, there is no doubt that his spell showed things that he's got to add and where he's got to adapt, particularly if he's going to be at that elite, demanding, hothouse level that effectively some of the players wanted. More coaching, more information, more correlation between what the manager was asking and, say, video demonstrations about how to do it. These are things that they felt were lacking. I think Kante was getting to a point where he could render these games that you've seen under Tuchel. Tuchel is an odd character. I know that there was real drama yesterday afternoon where he'd told, coming off the back of the Fulham win, he told Pulisic, who was the star of the first leg, "You're playing." And about 3 hours before kickoff, he said, "I've changed my mind. It's Havertz, you're on the bench." And Pulisic was ferociously disappointed. And now you would say, given Havertz's role in the first goal, the reasonable level of his play throughout, and then throwing on Pulisic, who creates the second and maybe becomes one of Chelsea's two, three most important players across the two games, throwing in Kante and Mondi, for example, then Tuchel, you know, history is written by the winners. But does Tuchel enjoy, although the side you're watching is remarkably well drilled, they've really enjoyed three at the back, they're completely comfortable with that. It gives Thiago Silva an awful lot of time to use his brain and his experience, which in a two centre-back system, four at the back, probably he wouldn't be having. Many players have benefited from it. You've highlighted Kante. They're really well drilled. He's somebody who's different from the previous coach in that on the training pitch at Cobham, he's interventionist, he's demanding, he's a tough taskmaster. I would say that all of the players understand and are committed to it at the moment, but not all of them are enjoying him, for example. And that's fine. Many top coaches have had that feeling. But, you know, he's a guy who can burn players out. And he's been really specific, Jer, about the fact that he's done an interview saying, look, I saw this 18-month thing and I was given, you know, an hour and a half to decide. And I was a bit miffed because I thought they did. They wanted Nagelsmann. They not only wanted Nagelsmann when Tuchel was appointed, but Nagelsmann said, "I'm not coming right now." And Tuchel was available. They were completely okay with the idea. Chelsea were okay with the idea that if they didn't quite enjoy Tuchel up to the end of this season and Nagelsmann became available now, they would pay Tuchel off and take Nagelsmann. Everything's changed in that they're in the Champions League final. Nagelsmann's the Bayern Munich coach and they don't need to unroll that plan B. But that's what happened. Tuchel was taken as a standby, effectively. And he's made the best of it, and good luck to him. As the months go by, it's really important for all of us to watch really closely how he continues to get on with the players, whether there's a burnout factor or whether they stay completely committed to him as they look right now. Super well drilled. And the fact that the English season is going to see the Champions League finalists play each other immediately and go back to Istanbul to play again, Chelsea having not City out of the FA Cup, is going to be fascinating. And City are a far more expansive and more interesting side, but they played not dissimilarly to Chelsea in their way of knocking Paris Saint-Germain out. And I thought Tuesday's tie was just exceptional. Absolutely. The way that City, not just that they pressed and kind of strangulated PSG, but if you looked at the way in which they did it, it was monstrously good. It was just so brilliantly executed. And we the trouble is we don't want two teams doing that to each other in Istanbul at the end of the day, I don't think so. Eyes front to see if City can find an extra gear that can get through the Tuchel organisation, the Tuchel mesh, and give us big entertainment in Istanbul. Starting from, let's have a look at them this weekend, I guess.
Well, that's my last question for you, and briefly enough, what do you do this weekend if you're Pep? Do you go all guns blazing to set down a marker, or do you like absolutely duke them out and play a completely different team so they don't get the experience right now of exactly what they're going to see? Because bear in mind, in the Cup game, that wasn't the first team either.
First of all, what you do if you're Pep is you watch La Liga television and you make sure that on Saturday afternoon you watch Barca hosting Atleti and on Sunday night you watch Real Madrid hosting Sevilla because it's coming to an absolutely beautiful climax in Spain. In other matters, if you insist, you know the answer. You already know the answer. Pep plays to win every time. There's no danger that he'll try and throw Tuchel a disguise about, well, this is the way we might play in Istanbul and then reveal a completely new facet to his ideas at the end of the month. No chance. You know, they've got a side where two principal tasks have been making them ultra competitive, making them addicted to winning, making them ruthless. You know that. Teaching them his system and his philosophy, that's been the other big part of Pep's work. He's just about achieved that. They are a different competitive, they are a hungrier, angrier, more difficult side now, I think. And therefore they go out there, you know, whatever happens ultimately at the end of the 90 minutes, you could bet your house on the fact that Pep has got a plan to beat Chelsea, which stems from the FA Cup game, which has nothing to do with Istanbul. He doesn't think about Istanbul. He thinks about how do we win? And I think his players are with them on that. And that's what I think we'll see. I don't expect it necessarily to be, you know, lots and lots of goals this weekend, nor necessarily at this stage in Istanbul, but boy, they'll go out to win. And it won't even be about set a marker for Istanbul. It's going to be about we win now. We win everything that's in front of us. And that's what's differentiated this season's City from the excellence of previous Pep seasons at City.
Graham, great stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers. Graham Hunter with us there. You can catch his podcast, The Big Interview, wherever you get your podcast. You can get it on the Go Loud player these days as well. It is 8:09. If you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.
Hey, scientists. How critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with Millikew Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.